This week on the BOAG World Show, we talk about the enigma that is regular expressions and consider how we approach our businesses. This week's show is sponsored by Full Story and Resource Guru. Hello, welcome to the BOAG World Show, the podcast about all aspects of digital design, development and strategy. My name is Paul BOAG and joining me on this week's show is Marcus. Hello, Marcus.
Marcus the judge.
Yes, that is the new role that you've taken. No, you have to be nice to our guests.
I'm nice to everybody. Mostly. Sometimes.
But compared to you,
I'm nice. Come on.
Well, that's true. I had this idea of having this nice altruistic conference where all men are equal or all people are equal. See, immediately I've been sexist. All people are equal and everybody gets an equal go at things. But no, you just want to tear people down. You want to turn it into Pop Idol.
Yeah, we can have prizes at the end of it. People would love that.
Yeah. No, because I'd have to pay for prizes and I'm too tight.
No, but they can be Paul's Gold Star and things like that.
Okay, we could do that. Yeah, I like that idea. Did you have a nice bank holiday, Marcus?
I did. I'm trying to remember what I did, but it was mostly drinking, which is probably why I can't remember what I did. I did a lot of walking, which is always nice. Went out with the dogs. Got wet a lot. It poured with rain when it was supposed to be the hottest, most beautiful bank holiday in history.
Well, I very wisely worked on the bank holiday and took the Thursday and Friday off when it was gorgeous sunshine.
Friday was particularly nice, wasn't it?
Amazing.
I did sleep off a bit early.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Unfortunately, I then managed to burn my big balding head, which was rather unfortunate.
Well, yeah. One forgets, because I went to, as you know, I went to Barbados recently, and I went out and you go out in your swimming trunks and you resemble a milk bottle, and you burn, unsurprisingly. Mm-hmm. And I managed to burn my right shoulder twice because it was so nice in the sea. I'd put all the cream on like you do, and I'd sit in the shade most of the time, and then it'd be like, oh, I want to go and see again. So you'd sit bobbing around in the sea for about half an hour and then wonder why your shoulders are burnt.
Yeah.
And your nose, that's always the one.
Yeah, nose as well.
Conk.
So there you go. And then on Saturday night, while you were out drinking and being rock and roll, I spent I spent until 2 a.m. reorganizing my contacts.
Why?
I don't know. It just kind of happened. And then
reorganizing. What does that mean?
Well, because
deleting people.
Well, I've got.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
I've got all these. What does it mean? Sorry,
it means deleting people.
I did delete quite a lot. Yeah, but also
not you.
I had people all over the place. I had people, in Pipe Drive, my CRM. I had them in my contacts. It was all just a mess. They were everywhere. So I sorted them all out. Mm-hmm. And then, for some reason, people mocked me on Twitter about it.
That's perfectly reasonable.
So,
I would have said.
I doubled down, spent Sunday evening reorganizing my bookmarks. So there we go. That was my exciting weekend. Hey, I tell you what, mine. I found a really good tool for organising bookmarks.
Woo!
Well, no, this is an important issue because since things like Delicious sort of fell out of fashion, and I get so many articles and cool apps and stuff, and I wanted a way, and I've found something called Raindrop.io. I highly recommend it. You should check it out.
I will.
I know that you want to organise your bookmarks too.
I'm not the world's biggest organizer. I tend to work. I really like when we went from in the olden days with email, and you used to like have little folders that you'd create with all your different names of clients and everything. You'd set them to go into a different folder. When it sort of went to the more sort of Google Mail model of massive
archive
dump of stuff,
yeah,
that you can search on, that's much better in my way. That's kind of how I do my files at home generally. Huge box that I have to look through once a year. And it's kind of like, well, I would spend much more time organising it into little files with labels on than that once a year delve in.
Mm. So. Yeah, no, you've got a point. And I've got some, but my bookmarks, just into some rough categories and tag them a little bit. And just, it's neat.
Tags are good because obviously that helps search.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, it's searching. Because I read all this stuff and then later on I go, where did I read that? And I can never find it again. So,
well, at least you actually bookmark it, because quite a lot of the time I read stuff and then don't bookmark it and think,
well, that's good.
Read that?
Yeah.
And then I have to kind of, then I have to use Google again to try and find the thing that, and try and think of a word that might have been in the article that is kind of, you know, individual or different.
Hey, before we get into the first talk, can I pimp something?
Are you... Go on then. I like it.
Well, I think you will, actually. I think it will be a subject that appeals to you. To be honest, it's a thing you could do as well. You would be just as capable of doing it. I'm running an online workshop. You know, I did one on persuasive design.
I've seen you advertise for this, yes. Well, I watched your video, Paul, well, most of it.
Did you?
I couldn't stand all, but, you know, right to the end.
No,
but,
obviously not. I mean, you know, there are limits to how much you want to see of me or hear of me. So, yeah, this is how to convince clients and colleagues the right way. So, which is basically a four-part online workshop I'm running. So it's done over 4 weeks, hour and a half each part. And yeah, you could, it's really kind of just taking all those little bits of techniques and things that you've learned over the years of working with clients and kind of putting it all together into a kind of coherent course, because it strikes me the biggest problem most people struggle with is getting other people to agree to what needs to be done. So I put a bit of a course together, and I was originally going to give it at Smashing Conference in Barcelona, but unfortunately not everybody in the world can get to Barcelona. Which,
when are you doing that, by the way, Paul?
October. You're going to come?
What's the date?
Let me have a look. I should probably know.
As long as it's not the first or second, then I think, yes, I think I have to go.
Do you?
For business reasons.
For business reasons you haven't quite worked out. It's the 18th of the 10th.
I see no reason at all why I can't do that.
I think that would be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you a discount on attending the workshop.
Great. Smashing Conf. Yeah, a full 100% discount, obviously, Paul.
Well, if I could, I wouldn't.
18th. Now, is that before the conference or after?
Oh,
it?
I don't know. Don't ask me. You've got Google. Use it, man. I mean, what do you want from me? So anyway.
Okay. Oh, I'm excited. I love Barcelona.
Well, I've never been, so I'm very excited.
Well, I have to go now just to show you around then.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be rude not to, Marcus.
Consider it done.
So, I'm doing an online version, basically, where we're getting into. So part one is on how to, you know, understand your colleagues and clients better and what motivates them. Then we look at creating winning arguments. Then we get into better ways to collaborate with people. And then the last session is how to recover when things go wrong. So I'm so confident in the advice I give you in the first three sections that I have to do a fourth section that say, when all of my advice doesn't work, this is how you recover. I'm really selling it well, aren't I? Anyway.
I always think the hardest thing, I suspect, just to kind of be the annoying person at the back in the workshop, the hardest thing to sort of make things happen is for people who don't want that thing or whatever to happen for their own political reasons.
Yeah.
And if they're just a bit mad.
Yeah.
That's the hardest thing.
The political one, that's okay. I mean, we actually get into that. And working with the politics. The little bit mad, the unpredictable person, is more tricky. It's a difficult one, but I suspect we'll get onto that as well. Now, some smart aleck who signs up for the course is going to ask that, because you've mentioned it on the podcast.
I didn't think that at all as I was saying it.
No. So now I'm going to have to come up with an answer. How do you deal with insane people?
But you should thank me for that, Paul, because you'll be going in with your eyes open now.
Yeah. Anyway, if you want to sign up and ask that annoying question, you can do it by going to boag.world/convince. And if you sign up using the code podcast, I'll give you 25% off. I've just made that up. Right, add code to a course for... and the podcast. I've just taken that as a task. That's how well prepared I am for these things. So there we go. So should we do our first talk?
Yes, please.
So this is from Paolo. And he is talking to talking today about whether you're a freelancer or a business owner, which is a really interesting concept. And I've very much enjoyed his talk. So this is Paolo's talk now.
Hello, my name is Paolo Fernandez. Since 2015, I've been the co-owner of a small business called Luscious Orange, focused primarily on graphic design and web development. We're based in Winnipeg, Canada. However, for the 10 years before I merged with my current partner, I was on my own. And I'd always tell myself that I was running a small business. And truthfully, looking back, I certainly looked the part of a business. But in reality, I was operating quite a bit as a freelancer. This conversation is to discuss some of those nuances, both in terms of making that transition from going from freelancer to a business owner, or perhaps just help people identify if you're walking that line and what you're really doing. And so this is coming up because quite often, including myself, I told myself I'm a business owner. And I was, but I wasn't really operating like a business. I was sort of operating in between. And that led to a lot of hard lessons I learned, eventually leading to starting a new company and merging with a partner. So what I want to talk about is helping you identify if you're in that same boat and giving you some suggestions or ideas to get through it. I'm going to pretty much go through four different topics. It's going to I'll give a brief sort of background in terms of how I came about it and where I'm coming from, and give you some recommendations or suggestions to help you assess. Now, this conversation won't involve any discussions on design, programming, or anything really technical. This is a business operations and soft skills conversation. So obviously, if you're rolling your eyes, which I completely understand, let me tell you about why you might want to listen to this and not just turn this off right now. The truth is, no matter big or small and what you're doing, if you're making money, it's not just about the work. And I know every designer and every programmer would want that pure approach to, no, it's all about the work. But unfortunately, it's not. There's a reality to doing work that needs to be assessed. Everyone pays taxes. Everyone sends invoices. Everyone creates estimates. So there's more to the work than just doing the work. For the rest of the conversation, I'll be posing questions that you might help you identify where you land on the freelancer versus the business owner spectrum. Let's be clear. This isn't a one or the other type of conversation. There's a range. And what might work for one person may not work for the other. So this isn't about judging. This is about helping you truly assess how you actually operate and if there's things you can do to improve. So with that in mind, I'm going to jump right in and talk about the first one. And this is kind of talking about how you deal with, like I said, all those things other than work. So I'm going to ask you sort of a question. When you talk about internally in your head, right, with you or your partner or by yourself, or wherever you are, when you talk about taxes and billing and quoting, do you consider that to be sort of the headache that comes with the work? Or is it something that you consider core to your success? If you consider it a headache, and it's a thing you tend to always put off, or the thing you resent, then you're probably more on the freelancer spectrum. And here's why. If you're an owner of a business, you actually really value those areas. Those things that are a headache to some people are actually what keep your business moving. They frame how you get work done, right? And there's processes and there's all these other things. But in general, it's not just about work coming in the door. It's how you handle all that stuff and keep the bigger machine running. Even if you're on your own, you still have to deal with these things. So if you resent them, you don't give them the respect they deserve to keep your business running. So as a good example, for years, I would always put that off to the end and I sort of just hated it. And when I merged with my partner, we started realizing that he actually really enjoyed that stuff. So now I actually have the benefit of not having to do that anymore. And my life is so much better because of it. But I did realize that I certainly wasn't giving it the attention and respect it deserved. So that's the first point. How do you deal with those other things? Because it's important. So the second topic I'm going to talk about will feel very similar, but it's actually a smaller nuance. And this isn't necessarily about how you deal with that stuff, but talking more about how you pay yourself. Okay? So this is something that anyone who does design or development would have to face. And this is actually quite generic to business in general. You need to keep that money coming in the door. But what we want to talk about is how you deal with that. So for years, once again, on my side of things, I would work on bigger projects. They would come in. I would feel like I was having more success. But I was, and I'm from Canada, so I was a sole proprietor, which means the money I billed was money coming to me, the human, not to my company. And there's different ways in which that goes about, and this is very much varies between region and country and all that kind of stuff. But what you want to sort of step back and say is my income directly tied to the given project, or is it tied to the company? So in other words, do you pay yourself a salary, or do you just eat what you kill? Okay, because for years, I ate what I kill, and money came in the door, and there was good times and bad times, and it was very inconsistent. However, when you're a business owner and you have that set up, there's a much more of a framework around you. Okay, so now I get a paycheck. And if our company has a really good month, I don't all of a sudden make more money. The company made more money. And it has a bank account that hopefully gets filled with money for those bad days. And when there's good days, you fill the bank account. Okay? That is an important differentiator. If you aren't there yet, you're definitely landing on the freelancer side. Because that stability is critical to growth and being happy. Okay? And this means more than just bills coming in. You know, this includes paying for stuff like software, Google, Adobe, whatever you're paying for, all those $5 a month kind of services out there. These are all these things that have to happen. And if you don't deal with them all the time, if you're going back to that first point that, you know, end of year, I'll just deal with it all, then you're not separating your personal success from the company's success. Okay, and there's an important topic here called what's called a burn rate. Essentially, how much does it cost per month to keep the lights on? And if you don't know that number, then you're a freelancer because you're sort of just Wild West sort of approaching it. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with that, and that may work for you. But if you want to transition into being a business owner, you have to be able to separate your personal success from the company's success, at least somewhat. So the third topic is robustness and capacity, which sounds really dull and lame, I understand. And when I talk about robustness and capacity, I'm not talking about the ability to take on more work. That's, you know, always find a way to take on more. If more work comes in the door, you can find someone to help you. Maybe you're a collective or you're a group of people, you're a partnership, that kind of stuff. But what you want to step back and assess is how well can you deal with setbacks and how well can you deal with things as they change? And a common term that's used is something called a bus number. If you've never heard this term, you won't forget it. What it indicates is for any given task or job or thing that has to happen in your company, in your organization, how many people have to literally get hit by a bus? It's not a very perky topic, but it's true. How many people get hit by a bus before no one can do that job? Okay. So for a lot of freelancers, their bus number is one for almost everything. Okay. And that's what it was like for me for many years. And so what you want to make sure you can assess is you want your bus number to get higher and not just tell yourself that it got better, but actually find ways to solve it. For me personally, I really identified when this became a problem, when, you know, a couple of years ago, I went on a week-long vacation to an area that had no cell phone service. I was literally off the grid for a week. Now, besides the fact that I recommend this for everyone in this day and age, it's just a good thing to experience, it also made me realize that I was a lot more alone in my business than I thought. And it was one of the main reasons I merged with my partner to form Luscious Orange, because we wanted to have that stability. You want someone else to have your back. And, you know, a lot of times a bus number is still one for many things, and that's okay. But it's if you're not even asking yourself the question, that's where you can land in some problems. So step back and say, you know, is there someone else? You know, and sometimes you might be, you know, working with partners or contractors or collaborators, and that's great. And that's an important part. And that might be how you grow into forming a business. But asking yourself the question is the important part. So the fourth topic and last topic I'm going to talk about is accountability. Now, let's be clear. I'm not talking about accountability to your clients. If you're a reasonably nice human being and you care about your work, you're going to be accountable to your clients and you're trying to do right by them. I'm talking about accountability to yourself and or your company. So when it comes to design and programming, what I'm really talking about is time tracking. Because one of the most common problems in this industry is that you're always happy to make an estimate because people want estimates. And if you want to get paid, you got to give them an estimate. And so most of you probably have at some point made an estimate and said, you know what? Let's say it's going to take 20 hours, right? And I want you to tell me if this story sounds familiar, because I certainly did it plenty of times. Sit down with a client, you have a conversation, and they ask you, you learn a bit about them, and you say, you know what? Yeah, let's go with 20 hours. And then you go ahead and you start doing the work. And frequently, I personally would spend more time than I estimated, but I was always able to rationalize it. I was always given a justification. Things like, I really like the client. They're good people. I'm really enjoying the work. So I'm okay with spending more time. I really want to make sure that they're happy. All these sort of things are all good things, but they're also justifications and excuses to rationalize why you spent more time than you thought. And in the end, if you're like me, a lot of times you'd still bill them for 20 hours because you felt it would be wrong, or perhaps that's the number you promised them, or you actually aren't sure and you kind of feel that you were probably on time. If you still do this, you are missing a critical part in understanding how you work. I did that personally all the time, and now I have a business partner, we have an employee, and we all track our time, and it made me realize just how off the mark I was so often. You will realize how crucial it is to holding yourself accountable means being able to identify how long you spend on things. If you're a freelancer, you certainly have that freedom, and within any company, there should be some level of that freedom. But what we're talking about is tracking your time to make sure you can accurately assess, not just convince yourself it was good. And we're talking about tracking time for everything. Accounting, invoicing, taxes, overhead. If you don't track that stuff, you don't know how long it takes, and you will be shocked by how much time it really takes up. So those are the four main points. Hopefully this has given you some perspective on how to identify where you are on that spectrum. So ask yourself, am I a business owner or am I a freelancer or where I sit? It's okay to be both as long as you're honest with yourself. Have a great day.
Okay, so that was Paolo. Marcus, what did you think? Did you enjoy that one? I thought it was interesting. I did.
That was very much up my street. I couldn't quite get over the fact that he kept talking about merging with his partner. So I imagine this kind of robot of made up of two people.
Oh, I was thinking more of a Siamese twin.
Yeah, well, it was something like that. But yeah. Yes, he'd merged. They'd merged together.
Yeah, messy.
So it took me a while to get past that one.
Is that your judgment?
No, he said lots of really cool things like there's more to work than just doing the work,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was very good because that's so true. Just looking at my notes, he said, yeah, the comment about whether you see doing the businessy stuff as a headache. That's so true. And that sort of harks back to what I was saying in the last series about the value of having good salespeople. And what all that means is people that like doing stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a designer or a developer or whatever, and that's your thing, you tend not to want to do sales. You tend not to want to do tax returns and things like that. So wanting to do that finding somebody who wants to do that is huge. I think it's possibly the difference between success and failure.
Mm.
Or the difference between being a sort of on your own freelancer and, you know, becoming running a successful business, as he described it.
That whole business about being honest with yourself about what it is you enjoy and what it is that you don't enjoy, and that and giving that non-chargeable work stuff just the attention it deserves. But it always makes me think about, you know, how I think you're so much better off just outsourcing as much of that crap as you can, and actually just getting someone to help with it, rather than battling. Or even if you're a single person like I am, you know, I don't try and do my accounts myself. You know, some of the admin I get help with and support with. So anything that I don't enjoy, you know, I get someone else to do, basically, and then I can charge my time out at a higher rate for the stuff that I do actually enjoy. Mm. Do you see what I mean? It's kind of a no-brainer, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I think it's the bottom line is don't ignore it.
Yeah. Yes.
Make sure you know about this stuff, and if you quite like it, then you're probably all right doing it yourself. If you really hate it, or it's getting in the way of the more important parts of your job, then yeah, get somebody else to do it.
There is one thing that you shouldn't ignore, which is time tracking. I disagree with him over that. Well, so I don't disagree. No, I agree with him, but I hate time tracking. It's horrible.
It's a tricky one, isn't it? I mean, we've been obviously running an agency for 15 years now. It's a constant thing in the back of your mind of, should we be doing more time tracking? You think, well, yes, we must, because then we can, as Paolo was saying, you can know whether you're ahead or behind and all this kind of thing, and you've got the data and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, but you can equally end up just fretting about the time tracking, or it's just fantasy. The time tracking isn't accurate.
Mm.
So... yeah, I don't disagree or I don't agree or disagree. We time track time and materials work, obviously.
Yeah.
But we tend not to time track fixed price work, because it's just wrong, is my view. It comes out as like...
it's wrong to do, but it's inaccurate, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sorry, yes. The figures are wrong, and I don't think you learn a lot. But maybe that's just me being lazy, I don't know.
Well, the way I work it instead is I know how much I need to earn to break even. And yeah, so I do on money rather than on time spent. I guess the downside of that is you end up working weekends and evenings without realising it, but I think I'd realise. I don't think that would creep up on me.
Definitely would. And yeah, we at Hayscape exactly the same, have been for years, and the little talk that I've given for this series is a kind of miniature version of that. I talk about design iterations and the fact that we tend to charge more or less the same for all design work, and we say the number of design iterations we do are unlimited, and that's basically comes down to the same thing of if we're not going under, if we're making enough money, then that's a legitimate thing to do. Obviously, I'll go into it in a lot more detail than that in the talk, but it's the same thing. Is the bottom line healthy? Yes. Ergo, our processes are therefore working. That's maybe a bit too simplistic, but yeah, I'm the same. One thing you did say about money, that is hugely important, and I thank my lucky stars for having Chris Scott to look after this aspect of our business, is having enough money to fall back on if things aren't going well, basically having a cushion.
Yeah.
And Chris has been sort of squirreling away for years with us, which when we had our blip in 2014 meant that we didn't die.
Yeah.
So that's again hugely important. And I suppose if you're doing the, how did he describe it? If you're eating what you kill, then you'll never put anything away.
Yeah. And that whole idea of that there are people out there that are, you know, basically not taking a salary, but just taking out of the business as money comes in, that just blew my mind. It never even occurred to me to work in that kind of way, you know, because it's, in my mind, it's the business that earns the money, not me. So you know, the money goes into the business. Now, I take a salary out of that, and I take occasional bonuses. But it, there's that kind of buffer. It's not me that's being paid for the work, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but that, you could argue that why not? You could get run over by a bus tomorrow, Paul. If you've got hundreds of thousands in the bank, just spend it. Why not?
Oh, and I don't disagree with that.
But it's different for me. I can't do that because I've got other partners, you being one of them. But you could. You're on your own.
Yeah, and I could, absolutely. But I like the idea. But I do dip into the bank every now and again and help myself. But I couldn't imagine not having a regular salary, if that makes sense.
I was only playing devil's advocate.
Oh, and I do know where you're coming from. And it is, you're by yourself, it is somewhere in between. I mean, there's no way you could have run Headscape like that. No. But, you know, when you're by yourself, yes, you could do that. But even so, I think that security of knowing that, you know, there's money sitting in the bank that will pay my salary for 6 months or whatever.
Yeah, that's exactly the point,
isn't it? It's much more predictable.
Yeah.
So, yeah, really good talk. Really enjoyed it.
So the one more point he made, though, that I liked, was the bus number. So how many people can get run over by a bus before you're dead in the ditch, which I quite liked. So yours is one, because there's only you. And we try at Headscape, we try and be two.
Yeah.
We try and have backups in every discipline.
Yeah.
Which is, just an interesting... I've never heard it called that before.
No, I've never heard it called the bus number, but absolutely the principle I talk about all the time, especially with the internal web teams that I work with. They often have one person that they're, you know, is a critical person, and if that person left, they would be stuffed. And in fact, I saw it happen once with one of our clients their head of IT decided to walk out one day and just didn't come back. And he was the only one that even knew all the passwords. There was no documentation, no nothing. it is something you need to be very aware of. So, yeah, great talk. Cool. Really pleased with the quality of the talk so far. So that is Paolo, who's the co-founder of Luscious Orange. Now, that sounds like a proper design and development kind of website company, doesn't it? You know, take a colour, take a random word, there you go.
Rock band's exactly the same.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah. So they're a design and development company in Winnipeg, in Canada. Very nice. And he's the primary web developer. He's also responsible for scope and discovery for all their web projects. He's got a background in computer engineering, and spent 10 years working on his own. So, yes, I think he's learnt many of the lessons he shared in the talk the hard way. So you can find out more about them at lusciousorange.com, or you can find out more about Paolo by going on Twitter. And again, I'm going to spell it PAULOAFERNANDES.
Zed. Isn't it?
Not his Twitter ID.
Oh, okay.
Which is fair enough, I suppose.
I stand corrected.
He can do what he wants. It's his Twitter ID, Marcus. Get off his back. Right. So let's quickly talk about our first sponsor, which is Resource Guru. So it's great to have them supporting the show. It's a kind of fast, simple way to schedule your resources. I bet they do time tracking properly. I know many of you that listen to this have got first-hand experiences of projects that get completely out of hand. You know, they run well over budget and time and all the rest of it. And, you know, they're the kind of projects you lose sleep over. You end up working late and weekends to overcome what seems like impossible deadlines. One of the causes of these disaster projects can be poor project scheduling. Obviously, it's not the only reason, but it's one of them. And if you don't have the resources available when you need them, it's going to be impossible to complete a project on time, and that's going to impact other projects and so on and so on. So to avoid that problem, you can use something like Resource Guru. So it's just a very simple and fast way to schedule the different people you've got in your company. So it's a tool that is used by all kinds of companies. We talked last week about a few of them, didn't we? And Headscape is one of them. So it enables you to start taking back control of your projects. And if you want to give it a go, you can give it a go for 30 days for free by going to resourceguru.io/BOAG, B-O-A-G. If you use the coupon code BOAG2017 when you're ready to subscribe, so at the end of that 30 days, you're also going to get 20% off the lifetime of the account. So it's very much worth doing. So, yeah, check that out. Okay, next talk. This is poor old Bob, who got bumped from last week.
Yeah.
We've got a problem, Marcus.
Have we?
Yeah, I think we might have to try and speed things up a little bit and get three in a show, because the number of talks coming in now is really mounting up.
I did notice that. It's like last week's panic. Please send us a talk. And it's like, oh, there's 27 in there or whatever it is.
Yeah.
That's enough.
Yes. we do have space for some more, but we might have to move to three a show and us talk less in between them. But that's fine. I think we
No can. Problem at all. Of course we can talk less, Paul. Never in a million years. But yeah, all right, we'll try.
We can try. We can be disciplined. But anyway, Bob. Was one of the first people to send in a talk, but he didn't make it onto the first show because we didn't do three. And I think if we're honest, in our heart of hearts, me and Marcus may well have bumped him to the second show because some of his talk did go over our heads just slightly.
Is that well? I deliberately really pulled lots of things out of Paolo's talk because I didn't get much out of Bob's.
And that's no reflection on Bob.
No, not at all. It's just beyond me. It's not beyond me, but it's just not really my thing.
Yeah, so he was talking about data processing. So you can see why me and Marcus felt a little out of our depth. But I actually did get one or two things out of it. So this is Bob with his gentle introduction. I like that. A gentle introduction to data processing.
Hi, I'm Bob Salmon, and this is a gentle introduction to data processing. Don't worry, I'm not expecting that you are, or even want to be, a stats guru or a big data expert. You might not think of yourself as a data person at all, but you still might have data-related problems that you could fix using tools that are either free or you're likely to have already. What do I mean by that? You might have a large lump of JSON, HTML or XML, that's all on one incredibly long line, and so it's hard to do anything with it. Or maybe there's a log file of users doing something like buying products or looking at articles, and each one is tagged with an ID for the supplier or the category. Your boss wants a chart showing how the different suppliers or categories are doing, but the data will be meaningless without names for the IDs. Or finally, you might have a log file that you think has useful information in, but there's so much guff in there as well that you can't see the wood for the trees. The first tool I'm going to talk about is Notepad++. It's a free text editor, but it's available only for Windows. The important thing is what it can do rather than the thing itself, and you can find alternatives for other platforms online. There'll be a link in the show notes. The important features are macros and find and replace using extended or special characters and using regular expressions. I'm going to start with the everything on one line example. The important thing to think about here is that in some ways, the text editor sees your file as just a very long series of characters. What you want to do is insert special characters called line breaks at the correct places. These will act as instructions to the editor to display it as a series of shorter lines. They don't show up on the screen, but they're represented by the special character \n, which is just those two characters one after the other. So you need to think about a pair of things in the file that surround the point where you want the line break to go. For instance, the end of one tag and the start of the next. You then replace that pair with the same thing but with line break or \n in the middle. Test it out a few times manually, then when you're happy, do replace all, and it's done. Excellent. We've got the large lump of XML or HTML done. But what about the log file full of guff? For this, you use find and replace as find and delete. So it deletes only the specific things you want to get rid of. To do this, you leave the replace field empty, so that whatever matches the contents of the find field is replaced with absolutely nothing, which means it will get deleted. This is also where we'll use find and replace using regular expressions. Regular expressions are a talk in themselves, so I won't go into the details here, and there will be links in the show notes for that. One is a tutorial, and the other is an interactive site where you can enter some text and a regular expression and test in real time whether they match. It also breaks the regular expression down into its bits and explains them for you, which can help when things aren't doing what you expect them to do. Something to watch out for is that, unfortunately, regular expressions is something where there are dialects, basically different programming languages, operating systems, or tools have their own small differences on top of the core ideas. Having said all that, here's a quick summary. A regular expression looks like you've just hit random keys on the keyboard because it's a jumble of letters, numbers, and punctuation. What it does is encode lots of different bits of text that are all variations on a theme or pattern. You can say these things or those things, but not these other things. You can vary how many times something's repeated. You can have magic characters to anchor the match to the start of a line or the end of a line. It can get much more complicated than that, so the trick is usually start small, test it, and then add to it gradually. The way I find myself using regular expressions is to delete the bits of the file that I don't want, because they can adapt to cope with many variations in the stuff I want to get rid of. So you put the regular expression that matches the guff in the find field of find and replace, then leave the replace field empty, as I mentioned earlier. Often it's simpler to do it in several goes, each with its own regular expression, rather than trying to craft one regular expression that does absolutely everything. The final feature in Notepad++ is macros. These let you press record, do stuff like type, delete, find something, move around, and so on, and then press stop. Everything you did between record and stop can then be replayed as a single thing. Notepad++ lets you say, do that macro 17 times, or even as many times as you can until you get to the end of the file. I won't go into the details now, but it's worth looking into. The next tool is Excel. You might think of Excel as a thing for doing maths or drawing charts, and it is. However, you can also use it to treat your data as a series of columns or a series of rows. So if you have last name followed by first name for some people, it's trivial to switch the columns around in Excel, and much easier than it would be in Notepad++. You can hide columns too. You can also filter rows so you see only the rows that have certain values in particular columns. You can sort rows to change their order. If you change the order of the rows, there's a small trick you might want to use to put the spreadsheet back how it was at the beginning. Before you change the order, add in an extra first column. You fill this column with 1, 2, 3, and so on. Then you do whatever you need to do to change the order. And when you want to put things back, you sort everything by your new column, and that will put it back into its original order, and then you can delete the column, and it's exactly how it was when you started. You can combine sorting and filtering with formulae to make them even more flexible. So you could create a formula that has the value 1 if either an order's date is in a particular range, or the order value is greater than a particular amount. If you then filter rows on the column with that formula in, you'll see only orders in that date range or greater than that amount. regardless of how you get there, when the screen shows exactly what you want and nothing else, you can use Go to Special to select only visible cells, and then you can copy and paste them into a new spreadsheet. The IDs to names problem I mentioned earlier could be tricky if you've got lots of different suppliers or categories. Find and replace for each one would take too long and you might make mistakes. So instead you could use the Excel function VLOOKUP, which is the letter V followed by lookup. In one workbook you want one sheet with the log file and then another sheet with a list of ID to name pairs for all your suppliers or categories. You add VLOOKUP to each row in the log file sheet. What it does is take a value, in this case the ID from the log file, look for it in a block of cells somewhere else, the list of suppliers or categories, and if it finds a match, it returns a value from another column on the same line, in this case the supplier or category name. The downside of using Excel is that your data needs to be in a fairly rigid structure before you can use it. Notepad++ doesn't need this structure, so you can use it to get the data ready for Excel. The combination of Notepad++ and Excel can be very powerful. Your data can move to whichever tool is better at doing the next job. After a point, text editors and Excel start to be too small for the amount of data you've got. They just can't cope. At this stage, it's worth looking at something like Talend. Talend is an ETL tool. ETL stands for Extract, Transform, and Load. There's a free version and a paid-for version, and there are many alternatives from other suppliers. An ETL tool gives you a visual editor where you can arrange boxes with lines to join them up, and the different kinds of boxes tell the tool how to extract or read data from an input like a spreadsheet or a database table, transform it in some way, and then load or write the outputs somewhere like another spreadsheet or a table. Transformations could be all kinds of things: filtering, grouping, joining, sorting, calculating things, and so on. At Best Course for Me, we use Talend to read census data in flat files, clean it, collate it, and then summarize it into a database so that we can produce charts on our website and our app. Behind the scenes, Talend is actually generating Java that corresponds to the boxes and lines. And you can add special boxes that are simply containers for your own Java if you want to do something beyond its standard set of operations. However, you can get quite away without coding, and as usual, there's lots of stuff you can read online about it. So, that's my gentle introduction to data processing using text editors, Excel, and ETL tools. I hope you found it useful. If you want to contact me, please use the BioAg World Slack channels. Bye, and thanks for listening.
So, yeah.
I have one note.
Oh, go on then. I want to hear this.
He's lovely, cosy voice.
Lovely, cosy voice. Right.
Yes.
That's
Bob,
it.
Wouldn't be nice to listen to Bob all day.
Yeah. He's also a big user of the BOAG World Slack channel. So
he is, yes, yes.
I like Bob. We had a really good conversation in there today, didn't we, about agencies and the future of agencies and the type of work you win. It's a good place.
It is, yeah. But let's not go there. Let's talk about... I know maybe we should go there because I haven't got anything more to add.
No, I have. I've got a couple of things. But I will say...
You do that.
If you want to join the Slack channel, you can do so by going to boagworld.com/slacking, and you can sign up there. But anyway, back to Bob's talk. Yeah, for me, actually, this was relatively helpful because he talked about something called regular expressions. Do you know about regular expressions, Marcus?
Yes, I do. Yeah. Yes.
So they're this kind of arcane witchcraft language that allows you to do very complicated find and replace functions, yes, amongst other things. And I have to occasionally use them. And I cry every time I do because I never manage to get it right. And actually, ironically, as we were just talking about the Slack channel, the last time that I had to write one of these things, I ended up going to the Slack channel and getting grown-ups to write it for me. It's just evil. There's got to be a better way than these things. But what one part of it that I wasn't aware of that Bob's talk helped me with is that there are various variations of regular expressions, which makes sense because there have been occasions when I could have sworn blind I was doing it right, but probably was just using the wrong form of regular expression. So, and best of all, and this made his talk, you know, worth including, was he mentioned that really good tool. What was it? regx101.com, which helps you build regular expressions and check them. And it was like, yes, I love this. This makes my life so much easier. Although, admittedly, it did confuse me when I actually went to it. Because regular expressions are so annoyingly complicated that even the tools to make them simpler are still complicated. Stupid bloody things. Anyway, thank you, Bob, for that tool.
Yes. Thanks, Bob, even though I didn't really get a lot from it. I'm sure other people will, more so than the rubbish I normally spout about.
Yeah, and I'm really glad that we're getting a few more developy ones, because let's be honest, we're a bit rubbish on the development side. We do try and keep this show as rounded as possible, but yeah, we're a bit weak on that. So if you want to talk about something developy, then by all means send in a talk. The only thing I would say is you've got to remember that people can't see it, because we had this conversation with Bob, and you know, it's actually quite hard for him to try and come up with a talk when he can't show any code, which is a fair point, I guess.
So that's the thing I found the hardest about doing the little one that I've done. It's just like nothing to fall back on. It's weird. No bullet points or anything.
No.
The end, you've got to view it as just like a little chat.
No, you haven't got to view it as a little chat. You've got to view it as serious and professional.
Okay, yes, Paul.
I need to check yours. I haven't listened to it yet. Is it up to standard?
It's probably the best of all of them. I will get Paul's gold star.
Will I? Oh, will you? Right. You sound like Trump.
Really?
It's the best talk ever.
You could not throw a bigger insult at me.
I know, that's why I said it. So, Bob works for Best Course for Me, where he tries to help young people make well-informed decisions about their future. What a cool job. Before he worked on systems for telecom and utility companies. No, you've definitely got a better job now. And during the last millennium, that's a cool line, he did speech recognition for banks and small businesses.
Blimey.
Hey, okay. What an interesting career. I like it. That's a real mixture of stuff. Stop typing, Marcus.
Sorry.
If you want to find out more about Bob, you can go to bestcourseforme.com and you can find out about being well-informed about your decisions for the future, but only if you're a young person. I don't know what the line is. I still feel young. Does that count?
Well, so do I. In my head, I'm 18.
Exactly.
But I look in the mirror. It's like, oh.
Who's that old granddad? Yeah, literally, exactly. In your case.
I am literally a granddad, yes.
Wow.
There you go.
I've just been to his website. Is uni worth it? That's a really good question these days.
Depends, like every answer to everything else.
And it takes you through your options. This is a really good site. I like it. So, if you don't want to go to uni, what's the options available to you? You can look via subject. Oh, that's very useful site. Good. I see Bob's gone up in my estimations. Right. Okay, let's do our second sponsor. Our second sponsor is Full Story, the next generation analytics tool. And no, a marketer didn't write that line. I did. See, I can write marketing bullshit too. So I really like Full Story. It's a great product. It's used by companies like Dropbox, Shopify, Me, and many more. So if you want to know what's happening on your site, you could just use Google Analytics, but that's a bit rubbish, right? Because you have to pick through it all. What if you could Google what was happening on your site. So you could literally just type in what you wanted to know. How is the newsletter button performing or whatever? Well, Full Story has this something called OmniSearch. So all you need to do is type in an element, you know, that on the page that you want to know about, or you could type in whether you care about clicks or whatever you want to know about. And as you start typing the name of an element or the information that you want, Full Story auto completes and finds it for you. So you could type in click or visit or user or any element on the page or any other kind of phrase that you want to find out about. So there's no kind of complicated filtering. Do you know what I mean? When you have to kind of go into menus and submenus and create segments and all this kind of stuff that you end up doing in things like Google Analytics. It's just a pain in the ass. You just say what you want and it builds, you know, your search for you, which I think is brilliant. It does loads of other things as well, which we'll talk about over the coming weeks. But that is a feature that I really, really like about it. You can sign up today and get a free month of the Pro account for free. And you don't need to enter a credit card, which is wonderful. So if at the end of that 3 month of the Pro account for free, you can still continue using it. You can use their free account, which gives you 1,000 sessions per month. But if you need more than that, you can enter your credit cards and sign up. So you can find out more about that at fullstory.com/BOAG. So that is about it for this week. Marcus, do you have a joke for us?
I have a joke from our very own Dan Edwards.
Oh!
There you go. I think my local dry cleaners can repair my trousers. Or, so it seems.
Oh. People are really... I feel like listeners have now, finally, after however many hundreds of episodes, really got your sense of humour now. Do you know what I mean? They yes. seem to hit the perfect kind of type of joke every time. It's very good. Wasn't it someone in Slack that says there's now a website dedicated to your type of jokes?
I've seen it before. It's been around, but it's not
my really
type of jokes. It's more dad jokes, but mine are more sort of wordplay jokes, I guess.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So, just to remind you that you can submit talks for this season at boag.world/season18. And also remind you about that workshop I mentioned at the beginning, which is boag.world/convince. But do keep sending them in. Don't be put off by the fact that we're filling up, because we'll cram in as many as we possibly can. And if we can't fit them all into the season itself, either we'll do a second season on it, or I'm going to publish all of the talks on the website, so you know, you can go in and listen to any ones you want there as well. So they will get aired in some regards, I promise you. But until next week, thanks for listening and goodbye. Bye.